Well, I'll welcome everybody to another episode of the Second Time Founders podcast. We have Austin here with us and also our esteemed guests, Julian and Sarah. I don't know, Sarah, if you want to give an intro to Austin or if you want to, Austin yourself, give an intro.
Yeah, we'll turn it over to Austin. So it's Austin Peter Smith is joining us today. He is a multiple-time founder. I think he says he's a 2.5-time founder, second-and-a-half-time founder. So he'll get into how that is. And he has a new company that's still in stealth. So we're not going to, we promise we won't ask too many questions about you know, revealing his new company, but we're definitely going to ask him about why he decided to start another company, what he's learned, what he's going to do differently, and hopefully impart some wisdom on folks based on his past experiences. So Austin, tell us a little bit about why you consider yourself a 2.5-time founder.
Yeah. And Austin, to be here, this is really cool. And I love the vibe of just like, I got on the call and you guys hit record. No nonsense. So that's pretty cool.
No prepared.
So, in 2019, I started a company called Capiche. It was basically Glassdoor for SaaS pricing. So I was getting people who buy a lot of SaaS to share how much they're paying so that other folks didn't have to go through the nonsense of dealing with salespeople and dealing with really opaque pricing and very different pricing from one deal to the next. So trying to create transparency in that space, just like Glassdoor did. And we, the concept was popular pretty quickly, and we grew a pretty vibrant community of people that are sort of power users of software as well as buyers of a lot of software. And so we were able to build a bunch of kind of velocity around that, a lot of user generated content, and we built up a good amount of intel on the things that people who sell SaaS don't want you to know about, like how to negotiate where in a contract, like which bits are like super negotiable and which are not. And all of those types of things that are very different from one company to the next. But we couldn't really figure out a good way to monetize it. And we also struggled to find a way to make it grow really fast. So it was like steady linear growth. And like when we tried as hard as we could to grow it, we saw steady linear growth. And when we like didn't work on it at all, we also saw steady linear growth. And so it was like almost there was not really much that us working on it was doing to change the outcome. So ended up, we had a really small team. So we started, this was also like in the kind of beginning-ish of COVID. And so we started just like experimenting with some new products as a team and leaving Capiche running. And then right around when that happened, I got a DM from Ryan New, who's the founder of a company called Vendor, that's like a procurement platform that had started a similar time. And he was basically doing a somewhat similar a concept, but totally different business, where he just was negotiating on behalf of buyers. So you hire Vendor to do your negotiations for you. And he was really interested in the community and the kind of the data that we were accumulating and some of those things. And so they ended up acquiring Capiche for like a little over $1 million cash, which was about 2x what we had raised to date. And so we took that money to continue to build, like we just did structure it as an asset sale and then used that as some funding to continue to experiment. And so so ultimately like it into my next company was really the same corporate entity, but then we built something totally different. And so that's why I was kind of saying that it was like that I'm a 2.5-ish founder. And so then the next thing we built was very different. So we started experimenting with like first radio on the internet, and we were like doing this, like you could with one click start just like live streaming on a public URL so that anyone could listen. And then ended up building this thing. We got the domain racket.com, and the idea was like, our idea was just, how could you make it like as easy as possible for someone to publish something that looks like a podcast? So to publish a podcast, you have to like go register with iTunes, and you have to set up RSS feeds, and you have to figure out where you're going to record the audio and you have to publish it.
We know.
A lot of drama. It takes Kevin like hours.
Yeah, one hour.
Okay, he says that. But we are like, that's why having you on, we got to get this blowing up so we get sponsors so we can get Kevin out of this job.
Yeah.
So the
analogy that I had at the time was like how difficult it was to set up a blog before tools like Twitter and Tumblr existed, where like it wasn't like insanely difficult, but it was like a thing you had to do. You had to think about like the domain it was going to be hosted on, and you had to like actually set up to potentially even know some technical things about how to actually set it up. And then there was like a kind of seriousness as a result of that, of like, this is my blog where I post serious things. And Twitter and Tumblr like lowered the stakes so massively to where it's just like you could just spew your thoughts onto the page, and it like massively opened up the number of people that were publishing words on the internet. And so that was the kind of idea that I was excited about, is like, could you do that with audio and like 100x the number of people that are publishing their voice online? And Racket went pretty viral for a bit, and we had a whole bunch of users.
What year was this? Like,
this was 2021. Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
I guess I didn't really say what it was, but really it was this: you press a button to record. You can share a link, mm-hmm. just like a Google Doc. So anyone with the link comes in and they're recording with you. You have up to 9 minutes, which we just set kind of arbitrarily and to like keep it somewhat concise. And then publishing was then kind of like publishing a Medium article. You like pick an unflash image as the background and you add a title, and then you instantly have a shareable link that's like a full bleed background image and just like waveforms of audio. So you could just like instantly share it to wherever you could share a link. And so people started doing all sorts of crazy creative things with it. There were like comedians telling jokes and musicians singing and all these things. Mm-hmm. And people who had an existing audience, especially on Twitter or like an SMS list or anywhere that you could like reach that audience with a link. Like Instagram, you can't really share a link very easily. So folks that had an existing audience on platforms where they could share a link would see a lot of traction. We never really succeeded at building like a network on its own. Happy to talk about some of the ups and downs there, but what happened with that company? That company I worked on for about 18 months and we we had moments of growth and never had really strong retention and never were able to build the kind of the network. And so it was like worked well for people that could use it as a tool to reach their existing audience, but that wasn't really like a very viable business. And then at the end of 2022 decided to wind it down and return the remaining cash to investors.
Oh, wow. You had remaining cash to return.
We do a lot, not a lot, but we did. Yeah.
Wow. And now you're doing a new thing. So what like lessons or what's maybe the biggest lesson you're going to take into this new company that you're working on?
Yeah. I mean, I have many. I would say one is like, the first time around, I was so excited to be a founder. I still am. I think it's like such a cool thing that I get to like create a business in the world. But I think I was so excited. I was too focused around the idea of like, oh my God, now I just like have a company. And I wanted to do things that made it feel like I had a company. Like I was excited to grow the team and just like all sorts of things that like didn't actually matter nearly as much. And now I'm gone 180 on it, where I'm like, I want to keep the team as at every single stage, as little, as small as it possibly can be. And I only want hiring to be like a tool to, it's like, it's our job at any stage. The current team's job is to build so much momentum that we literally can't sustain without growing the team. And then that's when we grow the team, as opposed to like you fill seats to try to solve the problems that help you build the momentum. Like that was the wrong way of thinking about it. And so that's like a huge, huge takeaway for me that I'm really excited about. And then I was a solo founder last time around, and that was challenging in a number of ways. Like it was lonely for sure. That was a huge one. And Another one is, so I'm like technical-ish, but not like super technical. And I thought that because I know tons of developers and I am somewhat technical and I've been in Silicon Valley a long time, I thought that like recruiting technical talent wouldn't be like incredibly hard for me. And it was like ridiculously hard. And I have learned that like which maybe this is obvious, but like having a super, super strong technical founder on the team is just a pretty necessary condition to be able to actually hire great technical talent in the beginning, because the best engineers have so many options and there has to be some crazy X factor for them to choose to join like a 4-person startup. And that is usually going to have to be like one of the founders being a person who is like so strong technically that they want to work with them. And so I have an awesome co-founder, Dave, this time around, who is that person who I've known for 10 years and I worked for previously at a company called Assembly.
I know, speaking of Assembly, I know the founder, Mads, Dieter.
Cool.
Actually really, really great friends with him. So,
Me too. Awesome. He's an investor in our new company.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. So Dave was CTO and Matt's co-founder at Assembly.
Yeah. And awesome. The one thing that I would say, one point, Julie, is that like being in Silicon Valley or being just in tech in general, like, I think that like one of the things that people really learn, and Austin, it sounds like you learned this, is like building a community of people. It's like so important. Like you don't know when your paths are going to cross. You should continuously like try to provide value to them. Not, well, also try to be friends with them as well. Like don't just try to milk them out of their technical talent or whatever that is. But it really is around like building, like you want to build a team ultimately and staying close with the people. And I think that if you worked with people, and I don't know, Sarah and Julian, if you wanted to kind of talk into this, but like these are the types of people that you're going to start a company with. Like I even think of like even my past company, like I started with my co-founder that she was hired on as a very like lower level person, and she just was awesome at what she did. And I'm also like, not that Airhouse is doing extremely well right now, but I'm always looking for that talent and those relationships that you build up over time that I don't think a lot of people really put like a lot of effort into like maintaining those. And it takes a lot of time and effort. It's like you have to continuously build, like go out for whatever, it's once a month, or have coffee, or go for walks or hikes, or do whatever. I think that like you need to kind of continuously like have those relationships. And those are the people, like Austin, I'm not sure with this is what happened with your co-founder or your technical leader, or I can't remember what you said.
Yeah, co-founder.
Like co-founder. That's how it happens, and that's what people don't realize. And so anybody that's actually working for a startup, like the people around you are, if you want to start a company, are the people that you should really create really meaningful connections with.
Yeah, I've also found that, like, you know, I think a few of us here, Austin included, like I met Austin through Twitter. I think that's how it's connected.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And I found like putting my life out there on social media has been really helpful for like maintaining those connections. It's kind of like a fast and easy way to do it. Because if I put out there like what I'm thinking about and what I'm working on and what I'm struggling with, like that kind of prompts people to connect with me, or they feel like they remember me, or I'm top of mind the next time they're thinking about, you know, who to grab coffee with or who to pick their brain for advice. And so it's helped me maintain and form new connections like with Austin, but also maintain, you know, connections with like people I used to work with or interacted with, without having to do like a million one-on-one coffee dates. So that's like my hack for quick and dirty maintaining connections with you know, great partners.
I see now, Sarah, why you're so active on Twitter. That makes a lot of sense.
Now I'm finding a lot of, I kind of like that better now that, you know, Twitter is, who knows what's going to happen with Twitter or X or whatever it's called. LinkedIn, you know, is actually the people I worked with, you know, theoretically. They should have LinkedIn connected with me. And so that's been good for like just broadcasting what I'm working on, what I'm thinking about, and, you know, kind of keeping up to speed with what other people are doing too.
Julie, what do you do? Julian made me frozen.
Stands there like a statue.
Yeah. So me
looks like Steve Jobs.
Julian. Yeah. He does.
Great pose to be frozen on.
And Austin, like you're connected with some like big time, big shot people. Like, didn't you used to work with Jason or work for Jason Calacanis? And that must have kind of got you
is,
in.
Is
with
Jason
me.
Big time? Let's be clear here.
Well, I mean, in the tech world, maybe not in the like outside world, though now the All In Pod has, you know, kind of become mainstream. So.
All in pod is pretty massive.
Yeah, I was just joking.
I worked for Jason at Inside.com. So Inside has been around for a long time. It was originally Mahalo, if you remember that way back in the day. And but in like 2015, it was a news app, and he wanted to pivot it to newsletters. And so and he brought me on as president and GM, and we like shut down the news app and built newsletters basically. And I spent a couple of years working on that, building out dozens of newsletters, and we built it to millions in revenue and built out a CMS and ad platform that still powers the newsletters there today. And and then he'd been the first investor in both of my companies. So
that's awesome. It's a good start. Great.
Yeah.
Julian, now that you're back, sorry, you froze before. What do you do to like create and foster relationships of people that you are going to potentially hire or in your next company, would co-found a company with? Like, what do you do? Sarah mentioned, if you missed it, that hers is Twitter. She doesn't like going on one-on-one coffee dates. It's maybe too inefficient. What do you do, Julian?
He's gone.
Okay, he's gone again.
I'll answer it.
Okay.
I mean, because Sarah, I think what you're saying makes a ton of sense. And like Twitter has been immensely valuable to me, and LinkedIn, that the LinkedIn switch has not flipped for me yet where I've like actually gotten that similar value. But the important thing also for me is like it's easy to build a lot of casual acquaintances on Twitter, and you have to like actually then push to like have conversations with people in DMs and like get to know someone in a more like
widened
way. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Otherwise, like I think for a long time it was like, oh, I have all these like casual acquaintances. And then I started to think about like, why don't I actually make these Twitter friends into like my real friends? And that does take like an actual effort, but it pays off a lot.
Julian, you need to talk because you keep cutting it out. So what do you have to say?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the kind of the one around hiring that I was talking about is definitely a big one for me. And then another one that, I don't know if I would give it as advice to everybody. I actually wouldn't, but for me. But the last two companies that I just described, Capiche and Racket, neither of them like solve an acute problem. Like there's like a real thing of like there's lack of transparency in SaaS pricing, and we were trying to solve that, but it's not like it's a pretty intangible problem. And then the audio one, it's like, yes, it's exciting for people to be able to publish their voice online. Yes, you can build big businesses by doing this type of thing and build really meaningful things, but it's not like taking a thing that someone is banging their head against the wall every single day with as an acute problem and solving it. And again, like I think you can build a really successful startup without necessarily like solving an existing problem that is acute and specific. But I came away from my past experiences craving the clarity of like this is a problem. We know people in this case with Howie, it's like, we know people in the workforce, knowledge workers have this problem. Many of them have it. There's lots of different flavors of it, but it is the same problem that a lot of people have. And we every day are going to be working on trying to solve that problem. And I believe that clarity is going to be, I'm like at the really early days. So I'm like, maybe I'm just like naive now, but I really, really craved that clarity last time around where like, it's like when you're building, like the Capiche was like a user generated content community site. And so it's like every day, how do we get more traffic and more people here? And it's like, it's just Yeah. There's a clarity with like just knowing this is the problem that we are here to solve. And so that is a huge one for me.
I could not agree with that more. Yeah. It's like, so much harder when you're not like building something that is already a behavior and a thing people are used to paying for. Like, I think Facebook has tricked us into thinking like, oh, you can invent a new behavior and you can get billions of people to do it. Like, yes, you can, but like it's one in a billion that become Mark Zuckerberg. It's much easier if you find something that people are already doing and they're already paying for, or businesses are already paying for, but it's really suboptimal and you can come in and just make it a lot better and steal that line item off the budget or get, you know, money from something people were wasting on something else, like then invent a entirely new behavior. And that's the thing whenever people come to me for advice and like, you know, how do I build a great parenting product? A lot of these like products are like nice to haves, but it's not things that people are already behaviors they're already doing, like fix a thing that people are already struggling with and paying for help with. And you will be so much better off. And that's why, you know, Winnie pivoted into the childcare market from like this general multi-purpose like parenting app, because that was not a thing people were paying for versus like childcare. It's a problem. Everyone struggles with it. We didn't have to reinvent the wheel there.
Which is why I think that there is a lot of people, myself included, that have went from consumer trying to reinvent something in my last company, Ship. Which we had a lot of problems. We had a good product fit, but then going and pivoting to like a B2B company.
Yeah, that's the question. Like, Austin, is yours consumer or B2B? Your new one?
It's like prosumer. It'll be more B2B over time. Initially selling to individuals, but it like is used in a professional context. So yeah.
I'd actually, Austin, I'd love to ask you this because we have our dear friend Matt in common, and he was kind of like, not that I love talking about crypto, but what you guys were building at Assembly was kind of like crypto before crypto was a thing. I can explain Assembly or if you want to.
Yeah, happy to.
And what it actually was. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like, just a little bit before its time. It's like if it had been 5 years later, like the investors would have dumped money into this idea.
Oh,
but basically, it was,
yes.
The idea was let people build software together the way that you build open source, where anyone in the world can kind of come and contribute, except build real businesses, for-profit products, and then share ownership, actual ownership based on what people have contributed. And we were using the Bitcoin blockchain to actually like represent that ownership. And so we built a whole like protocol. I don't even know if I'm using the right crypto words, we built a thing on top of the Bitcoin blockchain, a token system on top of the Bitcoin blockchain, where the ownership of these projects would be represented. And then when revenue came in, it would get distributed, or when profit came in, it would get distributed to the owners of the projects. And it was a really, really cool idea and very radical at the time. And I think that I guess DAOs are kind of a similar concept that ended up happening, but I don't know if I've seen like a platform for this. And the challenge that we had was just that it drew in a lot of like idea people who are like, just, here's my like app idea that's going to be amazing. And I'm here to Assembly to try to find someone to help me build it. And, right. And so I think if we had like actually maybe focused less on the profit element and just drawn in people who were interested in building stuff and then, but like still represented the ownership in a new way, then it actually could have like played out differently. But I don't know. Yeah. It was a really, really cool idea. And
yeah.
And was super fun to work on.
And the reason I wanted to just even to mention that, I think that like that idea was definitely before its time. Like if it was like peak crypto, and everybody on this podcast knows how much I hate crypto. But I think that was like a really interesting use case as far as there's a bunch of developers, it's all open source, and you basically like create a for-profit company, and however much you have contributed, you get those profits out, which is kind of like a really cool, interesting idea. But also that was like before its time. So that was probably 5 years before crypto took off. And yeah, I think Austin, you're right. Like if it were to have been created during the crypto craze, like Matt would have raised a shitload of money, and probably,
I still don't know if it would have worked, but investors would have been more interested in it than they were.
that was my point. I still don't think it probably would have worked, but maybe it could have. Timing is really everything in like when you're really trying to build something, and it's so hard to time the market. Like, thinking about like now the latest and greatest like AI, like if you're working on AI and we want to give people here advice as far as like we're supposed to be second time founders and we are, but like timing is so important. And so like AI, like you could have been working on it like 5 or 10 years ago, and you could have had the exact same solution that like now somebody else is actually like taking a hold of. But it really, you have to time the market, and it's really, really important to do that, even though you may think you have a really amazing idea. And so that's definitely something that I've learned. And I'd love to kind of turn around to you guys as far as like timing on things that, or being in like the like for me and Julian, like we were in the timing for our last companies, like we were in the height of it. And both of our companies, I'll speak for myself, like they did not work out. And also I'd say like AI right now, there's going to be so many, and I actually just got a response from an investor today. It's like, we're only investing in AI companies. And like, there's so many companies that are just not going to work out, but the whole like power dynamic, as far as the investors, they want to invest in the companies that are going to like 50x the fund. They still have to take those risks. So as an entrepreneur, it's very dangerous to kind of get into that hype cycle.
I've also found though that like tying it to the current thing, the current trend, does help answer the question of why now. It may not be entirely true, like the why now may be just because you're deciding to do it now, but it can be helpful when explaining it to investors who have to, you know, then pitch the deal to their investment committee. So, you know, when we raised some funding after the pandemic, we said, okay, our why now is like childcare providers and parents are now more, used to making childcare decisions online. They're trusting the internet. Whereas before they had to do everything in person and it was like preschool fairs, now they're willing to just purchase childcare site unseen. And this is a new behavior. And this is why now we think is the time to really double down on Winnie. And I think that that helped. Now, I don't know that it was entirely true. Like, I think we also had been working on the problem for a long time. And the reason we had that traction was because we had spent, 5 years on it prior to the pandemic, not just all thanks to the tailwinds of COVID. I think it really does help simplify it for investors, at least. So I would, like I said before on a prior episode, like I would encourage anyone fundraising right now to have AI as part of their pitch. Kevin disagreed with me, but I just think it helps answer that why now, that in a simple way that investors will need to present it and get it through like their investment committee.
To be clear, I have actually changed my pitch to include, and we actually are building AI products that may be a little smoke and mirrors. But I don't know. Austin, what do you think? Like you're a 2.5 time founder, you're starting a relatively new business. Where does AI fit in your kind of like tool chest?
Yeah. I have many thoughts. Also really quickly, since we didn't do intros, I just realized Julian, I'm an investor in practice. I don't know if we've ever like met on a call. So and you only have your first name there. I'm like, oh, cool. Yeah. So we know each other. I did not make that connection.
You're an investor in his company.
Yeah. But we've never met on a call before, I don't think. And so I don't know.
How do you have
is your first name.
Money out of you without ever meeting you. How do you do that?
The magic of Julian. Julian wow. is just the master of getting people's money.
I think you might have met Stu, I'll make investments without doing like if for a $25K check, I don't want to waste a founder's time and like ask the same questions. It's like there are many times that I do calls with founders where I have many questions, but then there's some where it's just I don't know. Yeah, the person and you've seen them from a distance and want to bet on them and that type of thing, and so yeah. But anyway, so AI,
that's true.
Yeah. I still do feel that way though. It's like, I see a lot of small check investors that like feel like they need to like go through this whole process of asking tons of questions. And I just don't think it leads to a lot of actual clarity on the bet when you are like clearly not able to like spend a ton of time doing diligence as a small investor and it's at the early stages. And so like, it's just like, is this person like, going to plow through walls?
I agree.
But okay. Yeah. So the AI thing. So I like, to me, there's just a very clear difference between like actual technological, like platform shifts and then trends, but these things get conflated. So like crypto is one where it's like, yes, there is new technology and there are some new things enabled by it, but most of the things that were being built in the crypto boom were not like fundamentally like things that could not have existed years before. And like mobile is a totally different example where it's like the advent of mobile meant people could build software that did things that just you literally couldn't do a couple of years prior. And it unlocked like amazing, amazing things. And so I think like, if you're considering like jumping on a cycle like this, that's a really important thing. Like, is there something really exciting for me to build that solves the problem and that was not possible? And so my new company is a product that has been tried before, like in 2016 and was incredibly, incredibly difficult to build back then. And, is still technically hard to build, but is newly possible to build now. And so like, this is like a question that I've thought about a lot, and it's not like, how do you follow the, like, if anything, I think my last time around raising capital was too easy. And I should have had to prove more so that I could have, like, I would have had more success almost if I was forced to prove more before I had to raise more capital. And so I'm not at all optimizing for like, let's jump on a trend so investors dump money into this thing. But I am very excited about like, there is technology that we can build that we literally couldn't have built 18 months ago. And that solves a real problem. And that is super exciting. And so, so that's how I think about these things. And I do think there aren't too many moments like that. Like there's been all sorts of like, I don't know, scooters was another like boom cycle that it's like, there wasn't really new technology that enabled you to like unlock scooters on the sidewalk, but tons of money got dumped in, tons of companies got started that were trying to do like their own flavor of that thing. And, but there aren't too many moments like this where it really is an unlock of of like fundamentally new things. And I personally do think AI is that. And so I think there's maybe a tendency to be cynical about it because the most recent one was crypto, which really didn't lead to like almost anything interesting being built. But I just like don't want to conflate the two.
Yeah. Okay. So I have two questions for you. So one, what is the stealth company?
We're gonna have Austin back on, by the way. He's promised me he's gonna come back after he launches and share his company.
And two, why are you using AI?
I mean,
I'm joking. Number three would be, why are you stealth?
I mean, we're like a few weeks in, and so it's not like going to be a long, drawn out stealth kind of phase, but I don't know. I haven't said publicly anywhere. And I think you guys are awesome, but I just like didn't want to, I don't know. I didn't even like talk to the team about that I was going to like go on this podcast. So I just didn't think this is my moment to like do the first
moment.
No.
In a few weeks when you're ready. When you launch.
Team on, launch. No, please do let me do it. No, but also for me, for Airhouse, we were stealth for almost 3 years, and we actually created like fake names and a different site because we had competitors that we were going after us, and so like that was the reason. And also I had some like people that were following me from Ship, and so like, I didn't want to like get them onto what I was building, and that may have been like a wrong decision or right decision. I actually am curious on just, and it may just be too new is the answer on stealth, but I'm always curious on why people go the stealth route versus just kind of either just like building it and not saying anything and then just launching it versus like, I'm assuming you're doing some stealth, like you have a product in market and you're under some like pseudonym or something like that. Is that the case that you're?
No. So, I mean, we're like 6 weeks in here. And so we do have like a sort of working product. If we weren't recording and publishing this conversation, I would talk to you guys about it. So like, I haven't been like secretive about it in general, but I also just haven't like
we
don't have a landing page.
I was just curious.
And then why or how we're using AI, I think was one of your questions. And
it was primarily
for parsing. We're not using an LLM to generate words, but we are using an LLM to extract meaning from words, and that is again something that the way that we're doing it would be very, very, very difficult a couple of years ago and is like trivial today. Yeah. And I think, I mean, I jotted down some notes when Sarah said that one of the things we'd talk about was like lessons that I'm applying this time around. And one of them that's kind of relevant here is like, I was successful last time around at building like hype and going viral, driving traffic, like playing the Hacker News game with Capiche and all those types of things, but too often I was like using that as a way to convince myself that what we were doing was working. And this time around, it's like that actually, it's like the total opposite. It's like get the thing working and then use that as fuel on the fire. Not like the going viral does not create the fire. And so you have to get the fire cranking and then leverage those things. And so I am being pretty deliberate in terms of like our go-to-market there of like get making sure that the product is really working before we do each next stage of like kind of building some hype and energy around it. And so that is one of the reasons that we're like a little bit quieter right now, but it is a product that like when people use it, the other people see them using it. And so it won't be like years of stealth. It'll be like within the next 6 weeks or something,
I would even build on that, Austin. I think that the Hacker News like Like I've been at Hacker News before, and it's great for like getting like awareness initially, but like what you actually do need to like, you kind of, and this is actually why one of the reasons we went like stealth, like I didn't actually, like I knew a bunch of brands. So we serve like e-commerce brands. And also, this is also our reminder, that the biggest e-commerce day, was just on Monday ever in history. So, plug my market. I think that, the reason that we went stealth was that I didn't want to have people that I knew that had brands that were like, oh, I want to use your thing. Like I wanted to get like actual, feedback from people who I did not know. I wanted to sell into those people. And that is like, there's so many people that have had like maybe wildly successful companies. Like if you, I don't know why this is coming up in my mind, but like if a Dave Moran like started a new social network, there would be like hundreds of thousands of people that would just sign up just because it was. And actually, here's a great example, was the Instagram founders, that they started a new company. I can't even remember what it is because I don't use it.
That news thing.
Artifact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Threads is another good example.
Yeah. And they use their kind of like their previous examples of success, to then drive people just to think that this thing is going to work. But what you actually want is the opposite. You want to create distribution channels that can really scale, that are not like even press to a certain example, like that can't scale. Like that can kill you, to be honest. Like as it took down lots of companies, but like press really can't scale at all. And right now press is like tech press is just so hard to even get it on anything. But like you really want to talk to the real users and you want to get to the real people before like you try to use your network because for investors, you like use all of that for your advantage. Like you did with Julian and Austin invested in you because he knew who you were. That's great. And like I have the same thing as well. Investors will like based on my previous company, will like literally I got a check from a very famous angel. I think it was a $250,000 check. I literally told him, he's like, I don't care what you're working on. Like, I will just invest in you. And I was like, I'm not going to tell you what I'm working on. And I waited to the actual, the check cleared. And then I told him, he's like, this is awesome. But so use it for your advantage for investors, but for customers, you can't because you're trying to build this massive company and you need to have so many different distribution channels that actually do work. And it is so painful. And we all want to go and we all want to get press or we all want to go on Hacker News and make this thing work. And we've also seen other companies like Dropbox, like that's how they worked and all this. That is one in a million shot. Like you have to find an actual way to like go through cold email, through like LinkedIn ads, through like whatever you have to do. I don't know, Sarah, if you want to weigh in here and like what you guys have learned here, I'd love to hear your opinion on this.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Like we, in the beginning of Winnie, did the same thing where we were, you know, brute forcing it and kind of tricking ourselves into thinking we had product market fit, getting friends and family to try it. They would say they liked it.
I tried your app because I knew who you were. I was like,
yeah.
And we
pulled all those cards and then like it took years before I figured out it didn't have product market fit. And then I remember like my co-founder, Anne, over a weekend, she put up a website with every childcare location in San Francisco. And it was like the most hacked together thing. And she shared it in a mother's group. And people just were like, oh my God, this is amazing. Thank you so much. And we had shared stuff for years in that mother's group and like would get like one or two likes. And like, this was the first time people really loved it. And then they started sharing it on, you know, in the same mother's group or in other mother's groups. And we were like, okay, this is for real now because we're not hacking it. So yeah, my next company for sure, I will save those hacks for when we actually have product market fit, because doing them too early is you're just fooling yourself. And it's like, it's just wasting your own time and money and all that. Also, I love your strategy of like not talking about it till you're ready to talk about it. I think I did a lot of like building in public early on, and still like people can find those podcasts and those, you know, news articles, and like they find them. And then they, when introducing the product today, they like use the wrong tagline and use the wrong stats. And it's just like, ugh, I wish that stuff could be like wiped from the internet, because it's not reflective of where we're at today and what Winnie does today. So I kind of would, if I were doing it all over, I would wait, you know, to go public till we had a thing that we were ready to talk about.
So Austin, how long are you going to wait?
Not very long, honestly. Like, I'm sort of using the product. It's getting better every day. And we're like, going to be, I mean, like I said, I think my view on the kind of type thing is like a little bit not as far to the end of the spectrum as what you all said, because I do think it's like a valuable tool. It's just you can't use it to convince yourself that you have something that you don't have. And
yeah,
so, but it is like a really, really useful tool that we are like pretty deliberately planning to use as we get the product working this time around. And then you also have to have a plan for how you break out of it. Like Superhuman was a great example of a product, which I'm an investor in and a huge fan of and have been a customer. I was like among the first dozen users of it and have paid every month since then. But it like built a ton of hype, but then really struggled to find like, how do you break out of that initial, like just the kind of power user in Silicon Valley is not necessarily a market that that gets you to where you need to go. And I think that was like the kind of the next phase that has been more challenging for Superhuman, but they have continued to grow, which is awesome. But like, but it was like crazy growth, and then no plan for like how you actually jump past that, or not no plan, but no,
yeah. That's actually a great like example. Like, the founders there had like they had built something that was really great, and they used all that, and they also didn't they create a wait list, and it was like just this crazy onboarding time and everything. And to me, I use Superhuman. I think it's fucking terrible. I don't know anybody else on here, I think, who still uses Superhuman. I definitely don't. I tried to convince my friends that it was like worth the $30 a month for a long time. And I'm like, no, I kind of bought into the hype. I was like, this is the next email client. And then I'm like, no, I don't want to use command prompts and all this shit. I like drag and drop shit and like emails and the way things are actually working. And I have my own thing. And so I think that they skyrocketed, and I have no idea where their growth is now, but it's definitely not as big as it was before. And I think that now they probably have to live in the evaluation that they created. And that is not good for anybody. But I think just looking at the time here at the top of the hour, we all have jobs to do. I'm on the eve of the second day of the biggest e-commerce day ever. I'll remind everybody, e-commerce is on a tear. Buy your favorite Shopify store. And if anybody else wants to end on anything else, if not, we'll thank Austin for your time. Anybody else want to plug anything else except for Austin's stealth project that we'll see soon?
I have three kids with hand, foot, mouth disease right now. So wrapping is good.
How are you seeming that you're like, you don't seem sick at all?
I don't have it yet, at least.
Stay in there. Don't go near them.
I know, but I need to switch right now. So.
All right. Get well soon. Your kid. Well,
yeah, thank you.
Edit on this. Thanks everybody for listening. Rate this podcast. Thank you so much for Austin for joining us, and we will see you next time.
Thank you guys. This was really awesome.
Make sure it uploads.
Yeah.
Okay. What do I do? Just